This is a HeadGum Podcast.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by the Fine Dining Podcast. Caroline, do you like to dine finely?
I do, because it rhymes with my name.
Caroline, dine fine, drinking water, drinking wine.
With Diane Feinstein.
With Diane Feinstein. RIP. Fine Dining, the search for the most mediocre restaurant in America, is a podcast where comedian Michael Ornelas is traveling the country, eating at all the chain restaurants in search of the perfectly average 5 out of 10 dining experience. The objective middle threshold of where bad becomes good, which, if you listen to this podcast, you're very familiar with the concept.
With a 5 out of 10 experience.
And bad may be becoming good, as God saves us. Recently, featured guests include Marissa Pinson and John Glover as they review Costco's Food Court. It's a two-part episode that covers everything from discontinued menu items to how many hot dogs could fit in their mouths. And today, his IHOP episode dropped. So right now, head over to linktree.com/finediningpodcast and click Bee's Giveaway to enter for an all-expenses-paid trip to your local Applebee's, the current frontrunner for the most mediocre restaurant in America at a 5.02 out of 10 for you and three of your friends. And you can watch or listen to Fine Dining on your platform of choice while you're there. Caroline, who would you take?
Oh my gosh, if I got a table for four at Applebee's.
Yeah.
Obviously, love of my life, Nathan, gonna be there.
My fingers are crossing.
Who likes chain restaurants?
Oh, I'm getting a nosebleed.
Oh, probably my friend Jeremy.
Oh,
okay.
I know him.
That leaves one more. Let me ask you a question,
yeah,
Kevin.
Yeah.
If you were gonna order an Applebee's right now, what would you get?
I'd get a fried onion if they had it.
All right, you're in.
Okay.
As long as we can share.
Hell yeah. Listen to Fine Dining on your platform of choice while you're there. Enter by May 1st, and the winner will be announced on the May 8th Chipotle episode. That's linktree.com/finediningpodcast. We listen to Mary Mary, and we're going to talk about it today on Good Christian Fun.
My butthole's tingling all the time!
Do you think you can make God laugh?
No, bitch.
There's no reason erasers don't work in your
heart. I'm popping pussy every day.
I'm a Christian wife.
Sicario.
I'm a Christian wife.
White women are notoriously shifty.
I'm a Christian wife.
You should be upset that I had a laugh with her!
Clean up on aisle butt.
When I say be kind to one another, I don't mean only the people that think the same way that you do. I mean be kind to everyone. Doesn't matter.
Y'all did one the other week because I was playing the Winans episode where played Will and Jada saying Bad Marriage for Life.
Yeah.
And that cracked me up.
Bad Marriage for Life. We had an entanglement on the podcast. All podcast hosts are in an entanglement. Welcome to Good Christian Fun. I'm Kevin.
I'm Caroline.
We're here to have good
Christian
fun. I thought
that theme song was going to be like a 1 week situation.
Oh no, honey, it's
like
here to stay. It's here. It's all brand new. We're accepting and embracing in this country the new normal, and that awful sounding theme song is a part of it.
I'm scared to make requests again, but if I could request the one where I'm saying I'm popping pussy every day, that would be cool.
to take it out?
Yes, please. Thank you.
Oh, okay. So you want me to take that one out?
Kevin?
Okay. Okay,
Kevin?
Monkey's paw curls.
No. Don't make it just a string of that. You auto-tune it to like, let's get it started.
It's a 3.5 minute song.
I just want to be able to look my guests in the face a little bit by the end of that song.
And it's the best when it's like a meet cute where it is the first time that we have a long conversation with the person that we're talking to. Good Christian Fun is the podcast where we talk about Christian pop culture, the movies, the music, and the entertainment made for and made by sometimes Christians. And we're not here to make fun of you for your beliefs, whatever they may be, unless they're like mean and weird and hateful. And we're not here to make you go to church. We're here to keep you from going to church right now, no matter what phase of reopening that your state is in. We're just here to have fun at a safe 6 foot distance from
faith. Yeah. And hopefully, you know, the resurgence of house church, but you know, like, a literal house church. It's just whoever's in your house safely.
Hey, can I tell you about my house church?
Yeah.
I pray to Hugh Laurie every night. And isn't that lovely? It's fun to think about how popular a show that was for so long. But we're not here to talk about house. We're talking about Mary, Mary. I couldn't find the transition.
I was like, what could it be?
There's probably a character named Mary on
one
of the
eight seasons
of that show.
Speaking of someone who couldn't find a house to give birth to Jesus.
Mary, hey, Mary. Mary, freaking Mary. We're here to talk about them. Of the infamous shackles. We've talked about
infamous.
Them before. Yeah, well, on this podcast, sure. We've been talking about it for, I feel like, 3 years. Because <laughs> <laughs> It was the first song where that you didn't hate and spit out
but
of your mouth immediately.
Infamous means, like, it's famous for the wrong reasons. Like, it's bad famous. They are, like, famous for
I understand.
Being
it's kind of like
good.
Notorious. Yes, I feel that. Then also of the famous I La God, which was an Erica Campbell special from a couple years ago. But to do this, we're going to need a special help from a special friend who's our special guest. Friends and folks, he's special. He's from NPR. You may know him as the host of It's Been a Minute with Sam Sanders. Everybody give it the hell up for Sam Sanders!
Wow. I've never had an introduction like that, and I freaking love it.
Wow.
That's amazing.
That's all we're looking for, is that kind of like constant validation from our guests. Like, is this weird thing we do okay? Is this weird thing we do okay? Is this also okay and not off-putting? So
y'all
so great.
Are doing okay.
Hey, and y'all and you like Amy Grant, right? You've listened
oh, yeah.
to her. Okay.
I love her. Okay. Now she was drama because she like went secular for a bit and mm-hmm. everyone was like, you can't do that.
Yeah,
but she did.
Not to mention the divorce.
It worked out for her. Who was she with? Was it Vince Gill?
Gary Chapman was her first husband. Shit. And okay, then Vince sorry. Gill was her second husband. Yes.
Gotcha.
Yes.
You can and have more than one husband. It's
her,
allowed.
Her third husband, who could it, you know, it could
Kevin
be any
T. Porter.
Of us. Yeah, it could be any of us.
Fingers crossed.
I volunteer as tribute.
We'll see.
She'd 2020, sing to me every night.
There's a lot. Hey, there's a lot of things none of us had on our 2020 bingo cards. Kevin T. Porter becomes Amy Grant's third husband. It may be one of them. We'll find
you
out.
You start mailing her get well fun. Cookies for her surgery. Hey.
Yeah, with like crudely drawn like icing faces on them. And then it's like one of them's cute and it's like, oh yeah, that does kind of look like my album cover. But then by like the third batch, it's like me and her holding hands by the leg and she's like, I don't want this. This isn't what anybody wants.
I'm going to open the back flap of my booth because this is really creepy visuals. Yeah, I know that the listeners can't see it.
So hilariously startling.
It's incredible.
It's weird, huh?
It's incredible.
So, fun fact that the listeners probably don't know, I record all of my podcast stuff in this little box that you can put your head in. It's called an ISOVOX, and it's a sound muffling box that's a little bit bigger than your head. It's on a podium. You stand up, and your head's inside of it. But you're in a black box while you record, and so y'all are seeing me right now with my head in a box. It's not cute.
And in the dark, it did look very coffin-like.
Are you going to be standing for the duration of this episode?
I always stand.
Wow.
Since the pandemic, wow. I've been standing. So I used to only use this box to record quick stuff from home without having to go into the office. But after the pandemic hit and I was stuck at home to record everything, I tried a few setups. For a while, I was recording underneath my dining room table, and that was cramping the diaphragm. So now I just stand, and it helps with the air stuff.
I do wonder if it would give you more energy. I've done a few where it's like, oh, this has gone on really long, and like an hour, two or three, I'll stand up and prop the mic stand mm-hmm. up. But I wonder, maybe there's some like scientific experiment we could do, Caroline, where we try to record an episode standing the whole time. And it's like 30%.
I mean, that's
better.
A whole Second Service premise, Kevin.
Listen, I mean, let's milk this baby for all it's worth. Listen, what if we do that one time and our listenership like triples overnight? It's like,
there
I was just standing.
All they wanted were more endurance tests. Up. Well, I'm also surprised you don't do this normally, Kevin, and then like get a few extra steps in while you're berating me, you know, or like going to town on Amy Grant. Like that would be amazing.
Don't love that phrase. I don't feel like I berate you for that. Sam, I do try to get my steps in every day.
How many steps you get a day?
So far I'm at 18,529.
Jesus Christ. Let me tell you mine. Hold on. That's a lot.
Ooh, I am at... This is fun, isn't it, Caroline?
Oh, I suck. I'm at 11,243.
Ooh,
hey, ugh, you beat me.
Anything tragic. That's, you know, over 10,000 before a certain hour of the day, I think it's terrific. I think it's great.
Okay. Okay.
My
Caroline, what about you?
Hilarious. Let's just say I am sheltering in place.
Now it's a civic duty situation.
It really is.
She's saving the world.
I'm staying put.
Yeah.
Yeah. My first 2,000 I got from indoor dining in downtown Los Angeles. My second 3,000 I got from licking doorknobs and going down the halls
yelling
of Home
at
Depot.
Store clerks.
That's right. Sam, thanks so much for joining us on the show today.
It's great to be here. Thanks for the invite. I'm honored.
We're so thrilled to have you. We'd love to hear about your history with religion, with faith, with what you call God. And I do believe we share at least one thread of it together in that we're both from Texas.
Yes, we are. I'm from San Antonio, the Superior Texas city. Well, Seguin, Texas, to be exact, but I claim San Antonio, so okay. Folks understand. You're from Houston?
Houston, that's right. We're the town gave you Beyonce, Renee Zellweger, and Alexis Bledel, the holy trinity of entertainment.
Well, y'all also gave us Westheimer.
Yeah,
the worst
that's
street
fair.
In America.
That's definitely fair.
Sam, what's like, with you being here, what's like the stereotype of people from Houston?
Okay, I think like in general, everyone in Texas who doesn't live in Houston is always like, to folks that are there, they're kind of like, oh, I'm sorry. Like, it's too much traffic. It's too sticky. I don't get it. It's crazy. And like whenever I go there, I'm just like, people stay here.
Yeah.
All the time.
Well, their shoes are stuck to
the
ground.
My uncle actually lives there. And exactly. I will say, you know, it's like secretly this gem of a city. Or maybe not too secret. It's full of people now. But the food scene is pretty awesome. The art scene is pretty awesome.
The music scene is pretty wild. I mean, I feel like it has a lot to offer the culture. I feel like.
Okay, you're really trying to save it for Houston. I see you.
We gave you Joel Osteen, sir.
Cut to Kevin's music scene like when he lived in Texas.
I like Joel Osteen because Joel Osteen gave us Israel Houghton.
That's
music
true.
I love.
Mm-hmm.
He's
yes.
very good.
I remember that.
Houston's weird. Okay.
That was the best part. I did do a summer internship at Lakewood Church for a media credit.
Really?
I did do that because I knew one of the guys who was working there doing media because it was essentially like a television internship because of the production.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was like an eight camera shoot every Sunday morning for every service. And one of the best parts of it was Israel Houghton's music. And in his playing throughout, because he would
do
the worship services. And he lived in the same suburbs I lived in at the time, which is Kingwood, Texas, a little bit north of Houston.
Well, yeah. What was the song he had that everyone's church choir sang it? Friend of God.
I am a friend of God. He called me friend. Oh, yeah. Come on.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Does he call you friend? That's the question. He does.
I don't know what he calls me or if he calls me at all anymore, to be frank.
Right?
But, yeah, how'd you grow up? How'd you grow up in San Antonio with religion?
I grew up really religious. So my mother is one of six kids of a Baptist preacher who lived in Birmingham, Texas. So she grew up going to church, and she was raised Baptist with the rest of her siblings. But then her and my Aunt Betty ran off to the Pentecostal church when they were in high school and like got the Holy Ghost, speaking in tongues Holy Ghost. And after that, they were born-again Christians. And my mother came out to Texas for college, and she found, you know, Pentecostal apostolic churches there. And we grew up in three churches growing up, my brother and I. But we ended up in the one that we stayed at the longest when I was probably 9 or 10. So the first church was Refuge Apostolic Church in Seguin. The second was Bethel Pentecostal Church. And then we ended up at First Apostolic Church in Lockhart, Texas. And it was the it was the most churchy of the churches that we had gone to, and we stayed there for, that's still kind of my church, you know. But it was everything. It was, you know, very charismatic. Everyone was speaking in tongues, loud music influenced by, like, the blues. People were falling out and shouting. Church lasted three or four hours some Sundays. It was the kind of church where on fifth Sundays, just because it was a fifth Sunday, they'd have a second service in the evening, because why not? It was just church on church on church.
A bonus Sunday.
Yeah, yeah. And so my mother, she had been playing the piano since she was a kid, so she became the church organist, which means that she was basically at the church whenever the doors were open, which meant that my brother and I were basically at the church whenever the doors were open. So there'd be some summers where we'd be in church five or six times a week, because there was Tuesday night testimonial, Wednesday night midweek, Thursday night service, Friday night service, and then Sunday service, and sometimes a second. And so I was always in church. And then before you knew it, by the time I was 13 or 14, I was playing the saxophone in the church band. And it was one of those church bands where it was very much like, it was a blues band. No one read music. We all played by ear, and we played the blues. They called us the posse. It was straight up. It was hilarious. But we just played like...
Yeah.
The posse?
It was like Blues Brothers every Sunday at church. Oh, it was super fun. We had a horn section. I was one of four horn players in the church band. And it was such a big part of my life, I ended up majoring in music in college, because I thought I was going to do that for my life. And then I was like, oh, they don't pay that. They don't get that. They got to make money, you know? So church was big for me. And I was very much a church kid. I did all the things, you know. I was up there at the altar praying and speaking in tongues and doing this and doing that. And for a while, people were like, "You're going to be a minister." And then I was like, "No, I'm not." But I was very much a church kid. Like, it's hard to overstate how much of a church kid I was.
It is funny for kids who do grow up in the church that clearly do have, like yourself, gifts of communication at all, because it's just in the kind of like binary, the dichotomy of how people think about it. It's like, well, clearly you're going to be a pastor, right? Like, it's always the first thought of like what your job could possibly be, rather than like journalism or any other sort of like communications work.
Oh, yeah. Well, like, if you're a 12-year-old boy that can form complete sentences and can like talk to adults and like hold their gaze, they're like, oh, you've got it. You've got the gift.
This
you need to be
man
a preacher.
Has something. This boy is exactly on the path.
I was prophesied to once or twice and told that I was going to use these gifts for God in the church or whatever. And now I work for, you know, secular Satan, NPR.
Basically.
I was going to congratulate you guys on making Satan the new CEO of NPR. I know that was it was a reckoning that was, you know, bound to happen.
It took so many blood sacrifices, but we did it.
It's called the new Perdition Road, I think is what NPR is.
Wow. NPR. Caroline, good grief.
Took me a while. I was while you guys were talking, I was sitting here like,
New Perdition Road, gracious.
That was good.
How did you know for sure, though, even at that time, that you didn't want to be a minister?
I wanted to be one for a while. I think church was going to be my life for a long time. And it's like, you know, I always knew I was gay, but like around high school, I was like, we're going to have to figure this out. I think that, like, when you're like 12 or 13 in the church and you're starting to have sexual feelings like all 12-year-olds have, you kind of just assume, like, well, that'll go away. I will do what all my friends are doing at church and, you know, get a girlfriend and then get married and life will be good. And then, like, by high school, I was like, oh, this will – there's a fork in the road somewhere here. and I got a – and I followed the penis, you know, and it was just, like, kind of like I –
it's a very weird fork in the road. A very shaped in a strange
way. Yeah, very misshapen.
Way.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah, I understand.
Why does that fork have a foreskin on it? What? Okay.
It's kind of one direction.
Stop. Oh, man. But yeah, like I kind of just like by the time that I was like in my early 20s, I began to just kind of slowly pull away from the church because I realized I was going to have to figure out how to be gay, and I did not have the energy to like not be gay for the rest of my life just so I could go to church. And I think I should be clear here, like I grew up in one of those churches where officially on the books the doctrine said, you know, you can't be gay, but like I remember the choir director when I was a kid, he was hella gay. I remember myself, like you could tell I was gay and I was still very accepted by my church, right? And so there was this, it was an interesting dichotomy. like, on the one hand, the church on paper was homophobic, but on the other hand, it was the one place that I could be as a young gay kid who was a big old nerd and gangly and, like, be accepted. Like, everyone had to be nice to everyone there because it's church.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
and,
like, they weren't
going to
bully you
up...
for being who you
exactly.
were.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my friends that I grew up with in church, like, I call them my cousins to this day. Like, they're family, you know? And so it wasn't like I had hard feelings not going to church anymore. Like, it wasn't, no one was like, you can't come here anymore. No one ever, right? I just kind of was like, it'd be easier to figure this out outside of this space for a while, you know?
Totally, yeah.
And I imagine, too, at that point, you were, like, probably pretty burnt out. Like, just that many hours logged in that place, too.
Oh, my God.
Even however much you loved it, like, it's just too much, you know?
It's a lot. Well, like, at a certain point, you've heard all the sermons. Like, there's no new sermon to be heard.
I was
going to
say, like, you literally heard, like, not even just the Sunday, but the Bible study sermon and the kids sermon and, like, every kind, every variation. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like, there's nothing new, right? I think, like, I miss the music the most. Like, I miss, there's something about coming together with musicians to, like, you know, having a jam band period is fun, but when you have a band that only plays by ear that has to follow the flow of the service and the flow of the spirit in that space, it is a really unique and rewarding challenge. Like, when you have to be the soundtrack for Jesus every Sunday, that's cool, and that's an honor, you know? And I miss that. I think for me, growing up, when I think back on it, and even now, like, probably the way that I really prayed was through music. Like, that's how I talk to God, you know? So that I miss.
Totally. And yeah, I remember having a little bit of experience of that too. Growing up in Houston, there was an Assembly God church that I went to that wasn't predominantly Black, but it was pretty spread across, and that included the band as well. And it was one of those bands rather than like, okay, here are the words and here's the programming. It was something where everyone's just kind of looking at each other the whole time. Like, are we going to, are we going into this?
And they're
are we
vibing
going into
off
this?
Of each other. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like a very specific prompt that I think musicians in particular really enjoy as a challenge rather than just like, can you hit the notes and here's the 4/4 time, but actually like, okay, can you truly read the room? Can you read each other? Can you read the worship leader, whoever they are, if they start wilding out? So, and that's that's not a context that's like often recreated in other parts of life, I don't think.
Well, you're like doing a film score in real time. Like, if the church service is the movie, you've got to score it because you're not just doing music when it's time to sing. You're doing music under the offering. You're doing music under people talking. You're doing music when there's the altar call at the end. Like, you are providing a musical narrative to, like, the flow of the service, which is just really cool. So that I miss, you know? And, like, I'll still find myself some nights on YouTube when I can't sleep. Like, there's, like, a whole weird subcategory of YouTube videos of really, really great church organists showing off during offering. Because, like, when it's offering in church, the organist can just
That's
go to town. And there's a few where they're just, like, doing it, and like the ushers will stop taking the offering to be like, yeah! And I'm like, oh, I missed that.
I never think of organists showing off unless it's at a baseball game, and it's like, oh, they know that song too.
Can I send you one? Can
Please, absolutely.
I will send you guys a few because they get into it. I also have a special place in my heart for church organists because my mother was one. But yeah, the music is what I miss the most. I think at some point I end up back in a church, but I've been too lazy to look.
because you kind of, how would you say, fell away from God's grace in your 20s.
As we all do, yeah.
And then and then, what did faith look like for you? Was it just missing the element of organization and the weekly ritual and rhythm of going to a church service, or did your actual view of God shift as well?
Yeah, you know, I kept waiting to stop believing in God. I never did. I kept being like, all right, at some point, I guess I'd do this whole atheist stuff. And then I would never felt that. And I was always like, no, I'm still up there. I see you. Hi.
What kept you back in? What kept you sticky with it?
You know, I had a really rough few years when I turned 18. So I finished high school when I was 17 in 2002, and I was supposed to, that fall, supposed to go from Shirts, Texas to Stanford University. I'd gotten some decent money to go, and my parents were like, do it, go forth. And I was like, oh my God, I'm going to be free of Texas and my family and everything. I can make myself new, right? And the summer before I was supposed to go, within the span of 2 months, my father developed end-stage kidney failure, and my mother had a massive stroke that paralyzed her left side. And by August of my senior year, after I'd graduated, they both were in the hospital at the same time, and I was just like, I can't go anywhere. So I took a year off to take care of them, and I thought I would go back to Stanford, but as the year dragged on, taking care of them became a full-time job, and it just got even bleaker. Like, Thanksgiving of that year, they both were on two different floors of the same hospital, and my aunt and I ate Thanksgiving dinner in the hospital cafeteria. It was the worst. And then by December 15th of that year, my dad died. And it was awful because after he died, my mother was in no shape to get his affairs together. So, like, I had to close down the family businesses and write his obit and plan the funeral. And it was just, like, the worst year.
That's like an 18-year-old.
The worst year.
Figuring that out.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember in the midst of the year, the only thing that really, like, gave me solace was having my church friends that were there to be very supportive and just praying. Like, I prayed so much, and it was just this. I don't know if any prayers were answered because the year was still pretty shitty, but I know that when I prayed, I just didn't feel alone. And ever since then, I'm kind of just like, I think I'll always believe in God because it's better to believe that there's someone there with you than to believe that no one's there with you. And so that's it. Mm-hmm. And it's nothing really more profound than that. It's just when I was in this place for a year, basically, where I felt very alone, I could always pray. And it felt like I was talking to someone. And I still feel that way. And so the way that I conceptualize God has changed. What it means to be a believer for me has changed over time. But this, like, intrinsic belief that when you are a believer, you aren't alone, I like that, and I keep that, and that's why.
Yeah. I did want to ask you what prayer looked like for you now, because I feel like so much of the common narrative, and as we talk to more and more people on this show, there's threads of commonality that start to form over time, and one of them is like, I still pray, but it looks like this now, or I still do this thing, but my intention is so much different. So for you, I'd love to know how prayer in 2020, and even especially with pandemic stuff and 2020 specific stuff, does look different than how it might have functioned when you were an 18-year-old kid.
I think it's twofold. I think one, you know, I started to meditate pretty seriously when I was covering the 2016 campaign because I almost lost my mind being a campaign in bed. It's just like, it's the worst and best existence for like a year of your life. And the only way to get through it is like through a lot of help. And so I began to meditate a lot. And I realized when I would start to meditate, like I did the thing where I was like, do a 10-minute thing, then do 15. Without fail, halfway through meditating, I would want to just pray. So I'd be like, okay, I can pray too. That's fine. And so now it's like half meditation, half prayer. But the prayer, whenever it happens, is pretty informal. It's kind of just like, okay, God, that's this thing. You know, I'm dealing with this stuff, right? And so usually, though, I try not ask for stuff. I try to ask for, like, growth, you know? Like, if I feel like I'm doing bad in a certain part of my life or, like, not being the best person I can be with my coworkers or my friends or my neighbors or my loved ones or whatever, it's like, how can I work on myself to be a better person? And I'll, like, try to unpack that stuff through my prayer, you know? And usually what ends up happening is, like, a lot of times, you know what it is? A lot of times it's me telling God the self-discovery I experienced in therapy last week. And like, God, you know what I think? My therapist says this. Do you agree? We should talk this over. Let me know how you're feeling.
It's the final therapy pass. It's the confirmation.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. But it is very kind of, it's prayer that is just like emotional check-in. Like, I don't ask for shit. I try not to, you know. Yeah. It's funny saying that now. Gosh, maybe I should just pray for God to end the pandemic. God, if you're listening, do it.
Yeah, Sam, if you could have been doing that like for a while, that would have been really cool.
LA would be in better shape, I'll tell you that much.
Holding out on that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. God, you out there? In this. In
Can
this
I ask
plague.
A question? Well, on that note, like, do you, when you pray, do you feel like God still does intervene in your life and like either bring growth or bring people into your life or change your perspective? Or is it maybe more of a practice of like when I say these things out loud, that's like helps me process through and like confirm what I already believe?
I think a lot of my experience with God over the years has become a lot more internal. Mm. And so like they don't pay me enough to figure out how God is working out in the world. I don't know. I don't know what they're doing. I actually don't know. Like, maybe God is really into Drag Race and is trying to make sure a certain queen wins. I don't know how God's spending their time.
He's supposed to get all his power on that.
Exactly.
Makes sense.
But I do know that, like, my relationship with God is one that's very intimate and personal, and usually the parameters of that relationship are in matters of the heart and spirit and soul within me. And so I try to see God manifesting through me just like being a little more whole, a little more sane, a little more rational, a little more kind, a little more loving, you know? And so like when I'm praying for stuff, it's kind of just like, Lord, help me be a nice, even-keeled adult who is good to people. Mm-hmm. That is, and like, that's where I can see the growth and that's where I want the growth in that relationship. I also think that like for me, a lot of the work right now is like, looking for opportunities to see God, right? So prayer is not just praying to God. Prayer is seeing the beautiful things all around us every day that are an expression of the divine, you know? So sometimes a really good hug is God. Sometimes a beautiful bouquet of flowers is God. Sometimes the perfect song coming on the car radio at the perfect moment is God. And so I try to like notice those things more and just in those moments say, thanks God, that's great. Oh my God, it's a rainbow. Love you, man, really nice. You know, like how can I see those things? And that for me is just as powerful as prayer.
That is, kind of gratitude of the mundane is such a like powerful centering tool.
Yeah, well, and also like none of it was ever mundane. Like how the hell are we all here? And everything just goes on. And we're just like, yep, this is what we do. It's billions of us on this like rock figuring shit out. None of it's mundane. It's all profound. You know, it's all miraculous. And so like, how can I have that view of creation where I can, you know, respect these miracles every day? That is prayer.
Yeah. Well, and I'm really struck too in your work, something that I think makes it pretty singular, and especially like compared to common perception of media or journalism, and maybe even like down to what the NPR brand is that you do maintain a pretty consistent sense of wonder in its expression of faith and religion, that it's still like very much a part of It's Been a Minute. It's very much a part of a lot of the interviews and the talks and the conversations that you have on the show. You've even gotten to talk to like icons like Kirk Franklin, who of course have very like direct involvement in this world and in ideas of faith and religion, but also like imbue it and kind of thread it in other parts of the work too. And I'm wondering what the motivating factors were for that, to want to make it a part of that sort of work.
Yeah, you know, for me, it was kind of just, I think there's a larger conversation at NPR happening that kind of explains why you hear more of that in my show. So for the longest time, the mode of NPR and how it operated was that every on-air personality was pretty much not personality-less, but like they didn't over-dial the personality. They were kind of there to be the deliverer of the news and not the story themselves. So it was not at all a personality-driven medium. NPR, you had a lot of correspondents and reporters and hosts who were almost interchangeable, and it was supposed to be that way because no one person is bigger than the company, and it's not about us, it's about the news, et cetera. And so I was trained up when I got to NPR first 10 years ago. The rule back in the day was we couldn't say I in our stories. So like if I was doing a straight ahead news story, I couldn't be like, and then I went to police headquarters You're supposed to say, at police headquarters, Officer X said. Mm-hmm. And so over the years, there was this gradual shift towards letting hosts and on-air folks have personality. In part, I think it was driven by the podcast, you know, revolution. You had all these podcasts become hits where they were partly hits because, like, you liked that person who was hosting it, you know? And so as that became ascendant, NPR kind of became a little more accepting of, like, hosts with personality. And so when I launched this show, after having done the politics podcast, which I hosted for about a year and a half, 2 years during the campaign season last cycle, the goal was, all right, this will be the first crop of new shows where we let the hosts just be personalities. And they told me walking in, like, you be you, be more than you would be, like, on the news side, you know, covering politics or whatever. Like, we want to see if this can work for us. And so I've been part of the first crop of literally personality-driven shows at NPR, and it's been fun because they just let me say anything. I mean, well, they don't let me say anything, but it's like I've realized over time that, like, oh, yeah, I could just talk about this. So, like, there were these moments in the show early on where I would realize as the episodes went on for It's Been a Minute, there were some listeners who didn't realize until episode 17 that I'm Black. And there were some listeners who didn't realize for like a year or two that I'm gay. And then there's some that didn't realize for like 7 or 8 months that I'm a Christian. And I'm kind of like, oh, I love that. I love it. Let them all discover it. That's just like a mind fuck.
Maybe I'm a little different than what you expected.
Yeah.
But that's been like exciting, and I think it's entirely a sign of the times, because had I started a show at NPR like this one 10 years ago, it wouldn't sound like that. So I'm happy to be here now doing this as opposed to 10 years ago.
Totally.
And it feels like that was probably a lot of the philosophy that animated even just little details like the cover art changing. So you're actually, your face is a part of it. That's not just like a
hey
generic,
guys!
It's like, this is the gentleman who is hosting
it's
this particular
me.
Show.
Yeah. Well, and then also it's like, I think part of why you were saying it sounds like I'm always excited about the stuff. It's like, well, that's because we only do what I'm excited about. Like, we don't, because the show gets to be personality driven, we can just say, like, Sam's not feeling that. We're not going to talk about it. Sorry. Like, I think that, like this is a weekend show. It's 1 hour out of the week. It's not, you know, morning edition. We don't have to talk about everything. Mm-hmm. We talk about fun shit. We talk about shit that I'm into. And, you know, so that means that there's a lot of talk about God and, you know, music and all the stuff.
Yeah.
Does it feel weird to be one of, like, maybe part of the first crop of hosts that engenders that kind of audience specifically? So it's not like, oh, I love this kind of brand or this kind of format, but that people might feel more of a personal connection to you as, like,
I mean,
a host.
I think it's job security. Like, if they ever fire me, I'm like, my followers know me. But no, it's fun to see the network change. Like, I think back on what I did with the politics podcast when I was there with them and what I'm doing now with this show. You hear some of our little stylistic nods sprinkling through other parts of the network. And what I hope is that letting me have this crazy, wacky-ass show on the weekends allows the rest of NPR to loosen its tie and kind of take its shoulders down a bit and just, like, have a good fucking conversation, you know? Like, we as a network, we're so obsessed with always being right, always being the voice of God, never pissing off anybody. And now it's kind of like, are you interesting and do you have a good story to tell? That's it. Go ahead. And so to the extent that I'm a part of that change at the network, I'm honored and grateful and happy. I mean, I think that institutionally NPR, like a lot of other places, has to figure out what it wants to be. This idea that any place in this political climate can be, if not appealing, unassailable to all sides, that's impossible.
Yeah.
And I think places like NPR are going to have to draw some more lines in the sand about what they will or won't do or say, especially in the context of our national politics right now. So I'm interested to see how that shakes out. They don't pay me enough to make those choices, but I don't envy all of our VPs and CEO people who have to make those calls. But I think it's a hard time to be NPR as an institution. It's not hard for me because I'm just one part of it, and I've carved out this space where I can just be as wacky as I want to be. But it is interesting to see what happens to a brand like NPR, which for so long has been so above the fray, I guess. No one can be above the fray these days. You're in it. We're in the fray. How do you act accordingly?
Well, Sam, if you would like to spearhead the TikTok for NPR, I think that might be the way to go, and I would be happy to help. And I think that is feature of news.
Have you seen the Planet Money TikTok?
No, I haven't.
So Planet Money is NPR's economics podcast, and they got, I mean, this kid is 12, I swear. Some former intern. He now, like, runs the Planet Money TikTok, and he's good at it, but it makes me feel so old, because, you know, the kids, they do this stuff. It looks purposefully rough around the edges, and it looks weird and strange on purpose.
Yeah.
And it's like the whole aesthetic of Gen Z is like discomforting to anyone who's over 30.
Yes.
But they're doing that with a TikTok, and yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so his came up on my feed like through the random, you know, algorithm the other day.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this guy's strange. But wow, he's like very on point.
Yeah.
I love the optics of Caroline as a 30-year-old woman saying, I could be your TikTok consultant.
I'll do the TikTok.
Let's just say I'm like plugged in right in the culture. Yeah. These are my people. Yeah. We are the same age. We are finishing high school. Yeah, it's been hard to do school in quarantine. I'll tell you that.
Caroline, I don't know. Finishing your high school degree distance wise is not fun. My heart goes out to you.
Freaking sucked. Yeah, prom. It's been tough, but I'm figuring it out.
I never had a prom. You do know that, like, the high school seniors this year, they finished high school as the pandemic hits, and they began high school during the most contentious, awful election in 2016.
I did not even track that. That's 4-year gap. Like, they are just bookending their high school with, like, trash.
Well, also, it's like, how will they take it out on their kids? You know their kids are going to have so much trauma. Like, imagine being a parent of your kids going to high school after you had the shitty high school experience of right now. You'd be like, well, you don't need to go to prom because I didn't go, motherfucker. You don't need to go to anything.
I didn't even think about that because we think, like, every generation gets, like, softer and softer with their parenting.
No.
But when you live through, like, real dark stuff, you're like, get over it.
Yeah. Everyone who has kids after the pandemic is going to raise their kids like depression-era parents.
Yeah, oh, fully. Seriously. Yeah, because it's not going to be the old tale of, like, we walked to school back and forth 5 miles in the snow, no shoes. It's going to be like, I couldn't hug my mom for 3 years.
Yes. Yeah. Like, I had to go to Whole Foods 5 days in a row to get a sourdough starter together. You don't know what I've been through.
And yeah,
you
don't know. Some of the hardest, just like the depression.
That is true suffering.
But they'll be like, get an A in your class because you can even go to class. You know,
exactly.
Like,
I don't even get to
you can
that.
Look at your teacher in the eye.
Yeah,
I would have killed for that.
I had to say fuck you over Zoom. You get to do it in person.
My graduation was a drive-through.
Oh, man. Oh, I can't wait for the next hardened generation of children to rise up.
They're going to be amazing.
And destroy Gen Z and just like eviscerate millennials as well. Well, Sam, thanks so much for sharing your story, man. That was really great to hear.
Of course.
Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back with more good Christian fun. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Now, Caroline, I got a question for you.
Yes.
How is your social battery right now? Are you feeling drained? Do you got a lot of energy right now? Where are you at with things as we speak today?
Well, you know, when you're pregnant, famously, your social battery is endless, actually, because you're powered by a baby battery.
It's like someone slaps a mag charger onto your phone.
Exactly.
And you can go for like 24 hours more.
I am the U.S. Marines of taking down social situations. I feel incredible all the time. So yeah, that's where I'm at. What about you?
Wow. Well, I'm feeling a little drained. And sometimes it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves too thin, which is maybe the zone I'm in right now.
Mm.
And for me, spreading myself too thin is like going to a lot of like Garfield events recently that have been happening over town.
Oh,
with the new movie coming out.
I know you get so excited about those. You got to spread those out a little more.
I know. And I need to really protect my energy and stuff. But, you know, it's worth asking ourselves, what's the right amount of socializing and how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people. Maybe you need a little me time, a little alone, introverted time. But either way, therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. So things like tuning into yourself, feeling and understanding what you want and need yourself, and then being able to communicate that to those around you, and then most especially to yourself.
Well, if you can't get pregnant immediately, that sounds like a pretty good solution as a backup.
And again, I think I might have even said this before. If I could get pregnant, I would, just to understand what it's like to have even like boundless energy that
right.
can kind of propel me into
feel
like
as incredible as to, you could feel
to exercise more, mm-hmm. to be working out like 3 hours a day,
exactly,
working 9 hours a day on top of that, and then
good
going out 2 hours. Yes, such a good brain on top of that. So if you're thinking about starting therapy, maybe give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. If you don't like the first person you get, don't worry, there's another one on the docket. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/goodchristianfun today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
10%.com/goodchristianfun.
You got some thoughts on that 10%?
That's a good deal.
It is.
The
I
first
agree.
Month?
And especially because 10% is where I'm feeling my battery is right now. That's betterhelp.com/goodchristianfun.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome back to Good Christian Fun. It's time to dive into the topic. Come on, let's go. Now, growing up, Sam, you played saxophone in the church band, but then otherwise, what was your... Before we get to Mary Mary, what was your consumption of Christian pop culture, music, gospel, pop, CCM, otherwise? What was that like?
So my mother's house was a Jesus music only house. So a lot of gospel music. We listened to a lot of gospel choirs growing up, a lot of gospel quartets and quintets. My mother was obsessed with the Canton Spirituals, obsessed with Shirley Caesar, obsessed with the Mississippi Mass Choir, obsessed mm-hmm. with everything the Hawkins did, everything the Winans did. So I had that growing up. But I also was this kid who was like, I grew up on VH1. I was of that age where like VH1 was perfect in the mid to late 90s. Like it was either music videos all day or Behind the Music all day. And so you got this music education that was phenomenal. And so I remember watching a ton of VH1 and sneaking to go buy CDs that were secular as a kid. So in like middle school or high school, my mom would drag my brother and I to the mall because she's going to Lane Bryant. She's getting some new dresses. And as she would go to Lane Bryant, I would go to Sam Goody, I'd buy some CDs, and I would hide them in the back of my pants and my underwear to sneak them home. And I would listen to them in the bathroom because that door had a lock and my bedroom didn't have a lock because I was so afraid of being discovered playing secular music at home.
Was this on a portable CD player?
Yes, it okay. was. A great. Sony silverish looking thing.
Discman.
And I remember, I would discover these like great pieces of like music history alone in my bathroom. Like I remember discovering Stevie Wonder's Inner Visions in eighth grade, and I would go sit in the bathroom for hours just to play that album. And my mom was either like, either he has like GI issues or he is just jacking off a whole bunch. But what the fuck is that kid doing in there? But I was learning my musics.
Yeah. He was just listening to like gorgeous music. Something's wrong with his body. Like it's wrong.
Exactly.
Yeah. Very superstitious. Knock, knock, knock. I'll be out in a minute.
Mom.
Basically.
I just need to finish
Exactly. Well, and then what was also fun, by the time I was in high school playing with the church band, and I was doing so before high school, but in high school, this was like neo soul's moment. And so you had artists like D'Angelo and Jill Scott and Maxwell and Erykah Badu making like really great stuff. Some of the guys in the church band and me, we would like sneak in riffs of those songs into the church music.
Ah, I love that so much.
There was a good year or two where we would sneak in D'Angelo riffs into all the songs we played in church and no one knew. And we were like, we got over on them. We did it.
I feel like people still do that, by the way. Oh, yeah. I feel like in or like straight up in some churches I've been to, they'll just play that song.
Oh, they'll play that song. Like, they'll play that song.
Where the Streets Have No Name or whatever. I've heard Blackbird in a Sunday service before. You know,
really?
Nature. Yeah. Mm-mm.
I love it.
Do you guys remember, by the way, this is kind of a side thing, but do you remember the first physical CD that you ever bought?
I remember that before we ended up at the church we were at for the longest time, one of the churches before that was a little less strict about secular music and they allowed you to listen to it. And one Christmas when I was in maybe second or third grade, my mother and my aunt Alta, they got me Boys to Men, Cooley High Harmony, and the first SWV album. And they let me keep Boys to Men, but a week or so after giving me the SWV album, they heard that song Downtown, which is all about oral sex, and they were like, give us that CD back. We're taking it back from you. So I got to keep the Boys to Men one, but SWV had to go.
A return policy.
You're like, what? It's just about the urban center.
Do you remember your first Caroline that you bought with your own money?
I'm truly racking my brain. I'm not sure if I ever bought a CD now that I think about it, because I feel like my sister, who was 6 years older than me, bought a lot, and then she brought home like this just like huge album of CDs, and a lot of them were mixtapes that her college friends had made. So I felt like that was like where I found music. Like people would give them to me. My mom would buy CDs, and they would end up being like really good artists, and she picked them off the album cover. I'm not kidding. And like that's how I learned about like the format, and I think even Rufus Wainwright or something. But anyway, so I don't know if I like did CDs as a kid. I think eventually I got on streaming so soon. So.
You know, it goes back to the fact that you are class of 2021.
Yeah, I'm a digital native.
You would completely
just like
leapfrog
ones and zeros. Yeah, I don't even know what a Walkman is anymore.
I think my first secular one that I remember for sure was not the first one, not Jagged Little Pill, but Alanis Morissette's sophomore album, supposed former Infatuation Junkie. And I remember buying it from a Walmart.
That was not a good album. I'm sorry.
There's a few good songs on it, but it is mostly like obtuse poetry. And it was.
Oh,
that's
no.
The one
when you're like trying to listen really hard. I'm like, this is groovy. Like,
but I mean, because it was my first like non-Christian stuff, I was like, what's this? This is cool. And so I was like, thank you, India. Like that was appealing at the time. It would not age as appealing. I still like Thank You though.
It's funny.
I will say this is a weird tick of mine. Not weird, awesome. Every long road trip I do, at some point I play Jagged Little Pill in its entirety on the road.
Damn.
And that motherfucker still holds up.
Oh, absolutely.
So good. Every song.
Oh, and she knows there was Jagged Little Pill on Broadway. And my thought is like with any of those jukebox musicals, especially with her catalog, it's like, what are the other songs besides like that album? Like, is it the Hands Clean one with the weird intergenerational romance? I know.
It's just Jagged Little Pill. Well, this is also the thing, and this is really a digression. She made all of Jagged Little Pill with what's his name, Glenn Ballard,
one of
the great songwriters of his generation, and they just like locked and loaded. They were so in sync. They made beautiful art together. And I think there's this thing that happens where you kind of think you can do it alone, and it's like, maybe you can't.
Yeah.
Maybe songwriters are good at their jobs because they're good at their jobs.
It's like Elton without Toppin. It's like Wes Anderson
without
Owen Wilson. Jack. I mean, maybe, yeah. And also, well, and before we settled on the topic of Mary Mary today, we were talking briefly about Hillsong stuff. You said that you had like somewhat of an affection for the Hillsong music.
Oh, I fucking love Hillsong. No, I shouldn't say that.
That's okay.
I love Hillsong. So I experienced Hillsong when I would like end up at church with like white friends and they were just like, damn, this Hillsong stuff. And I was like, okay. but I really got into Hillsong when some of the band at my church would like black some of that shit up. And like they would like take these Hillsong songs and give it a little soul, and give it a little
goodness.
Spark.
I thought that was nice.
And like they would have like Sister Hazel and Sister Sharon singing the lead, and you'd be like, yeah, take me to church. I love that. And like I'm trying to think, and this one might not have been directly Hillsong, but it was like in the vein of Hillsong spirituality and that sound. What was the one? It might not have been Hillsong, but it was of that ilk. You Are the Air I Breathe. Was that Hillsong?
You Are the Air I Breathe. That one?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So that's not a Hillsong song, but it was like of that vein.
I think it is a Hillsong song.
You think it is? Okay.
Or it might be.
It was
be,
very like.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's them for sure.
Okay. So like this song is like very much like light, breathy, white Christian rock. But when we did You Are the Air I Breathe, like by the end of it, there's some demons being cast out. Everyone is hollering. Everyone's like, yeah. And you're like,
oh my
yeah,
God.
That's my kind of Hillsong. Turn it up.
Oh, so you're talking like 90s core Hillsong. You're talking like maybe Shout to the Lord stuff, not necessarily Ocean stuff.
Yeah, I'm talking back in the
day. Okay, Darling Check, Potter's Hand, get at me, things of that nature.
Yes,
okay.
Yes. And they would just black that stuff up, and I was like, and so like, I think more about it, and I think that like, there are lots, like, this is not a new phenomenon. Like, when I think about some of the R&B that I love most from like the 60s, it was when like quote unquote black music and quote unquote black white music like came together. Like I think of everything that Dionne Warwick did with Burt Bacharach. That's some of the best R&B of the 60s.
Oh, yeah.
And it worked because it was people from two different worlds coming together. Or like every time Aretha Franklin covered some white guy's rock song and made it better. It's
Aretha
like,
Franklin's cover of Eleanor Rigby, where she starts it by just saying, I'm Eleanor Rigby, is incredible. One of my favorite covers ever. Or Bridge Over Troubled Water, another great.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And so like, I was always like, as someone who just like looks at race critically, I still think fondly about the ways in which like some music, just by the way it sounds, represents like it's a musical representation of like racial harmony and healing. And like when I think back on Hillsong and the way that my church sang Hillsong, I was like, this is the body of Christ that Christ intended. All of us coming together, jamming.
Well, don't let Hillsong get a hold of this audio, you know, because they will run with it, and it will become central to their church.
NPR Sam Sanders says Hillsong is unimpeachably
Hillsong.
Good.
Yeah. It's got like that stock image of like a white hand and a black hand. And, like, this is basically what Hillsong is.
That's what Hillsong is. The world needs it. Yes.
So how did Mary Mary come into your life? What part did that fill in your life?
I remember, so like when that first album came out and that first single came out, it was like, you know, there was always this tension with like any black gospel singer, like how close to secular R&B could you get without getting in trouble? Mm-hmm. And we would hear growing up, like, you know, some of the songs that were deemed Christian really weren't Christian enough. And there'd be sermons that we would hear over the pulpit lambasting Christian songs that didn't say Jesus. They were like, that's not really Christian. They're trying to be crossover. You can't do that. You need Jesus. And I remember when Mary Mary came out with that first album, even the old heads in the church liked them, because I think in spite of the sound of their album and their whole vibe being pretty secular, it sounded like top 40 R&B radio, they could still belt like old school church singers. And so that kind of let people be like, okay, they still got it. I get it. They can holler. Yeah. That's still something. And I remember when that album came out, I remember saying, they're great. I love them. And I remember thinking, oh, they feel a lot like Brandy. So I was obsessed with Brandy, and I think her second and third solo albums were like the pinnacle of like late 90s R&B.
Oh, yeah.
And her producer during that time was Rodney Jerkins, and Rodney Jerkins worked on some of the songs from Mary Mary's first album.
Oh, wow.
And their lead producer was this other guy, Warren Campbell or something, who was good friends with Rodney Jerkins. So the whole first two Mary Mary albums sounded like a gospel Brandy album, which I loved, you know? But it was funny because, like, they were towing this line all the time. You know, we can talk about the lead single Shackles forever, but if you go to the album, there are these really interesting juxtapositions. So I actually took notes this morning while I was playing the album.
Wow.
To it.
Great.
You did the work.
I did the work. And so, like, there's this one song early on the album called, it's called I Sings. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like a Faith Evans song. It has this bass line that feels like her song All Night Long. And it sounds like a song that you would hear in the nightclub. And they never really say Jesus in the song. And it just feels like a song made for a club. And then the next song after that is What a Friend We Have in Jesus. And you're like, okay, they're really like towing the line. They're trying really hard to appeal to both sex. And they kind of did it. But like, it just underscored this constant struggle that Christian artists trying to make R&B had to go through back then. Like, there was this other song called Be Happy that reads like a love ballad and sounds like a love ballad, and they never actually say the word Jesus, but yet they're singing lyrics like, I found someone who can love me forever. And it's like, that's interesting. Like, it was just strange. But that was that line you had to toe back then. And I still wonder why we can't have artists make an album where, like, half of it's about, like, secular stuff and, like, sex and drugs, and the other half is about God, because, like, that's how people actually are.
Right.
Anyways, yes. Mary couldn't do that, and they towed that line well, which I appreciated.
They did. I do love how on that song, I Sings, it is the... Wait, I do want to play just, like, a little bit of it.
Yeah.
Because it has a feature by the one and only BBJ, a singular sound that definitely doesn't at all sound like any other famous rapper that you might have heard of. I'll play a little bit of it. And then there's a great part of the music video, too.
Why does he sound like Notorious B.I.G.?
Exactly.
Like, seriously, they were trying so hard to let you not know that this is Christian music. Baby, baby.
Oh my gosh.
I found some article of his, I think off of his Wikipedia page, that was him like, yeah, geez, people say I sound like him a lot. I don't know what that's about, but whatever.
People forget, like, there's actually a feature on this album. They have a song with Destiny's Child.
They do.
Walking the line. They were
that
walking
was crazy.
The line. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Destiny's Child was like, I feel like they were open about being all Christians, right? At least for like a while.
Yeah, so
in their early career.
It really wasn't that crazy at the time in 2000. It's funny to think that this like kind of esoteric album has a small feature from a group with one of the most famous artists alive now. But
yeah.
That part of it's funny. That song I sings, BBJ does say, from the Brooklyn Bridge to the Woods of Holly, I roll like Tonto, Honcho, Kimo, Sabi, but it's still here. No doubt, I'm thankful, mommy.
Oh my God!
The and there's a lyric later where he says, "Big bro, Jay, you know I stay fly with my husky self. Mustard seed faith manifests mustard seed wealth," which is like a perfect encapsulation of prosperity gospel.
There you go.
Politics,
this album has it all. This album has it all.
It truly has something for everyone. And I did. I'm gonna share my screen with you both, because I did want to show you in the music video. Sam, you were talking about, you heard the Brandy influence. Brandy is in the music video.
Oh my God! She is.
She is just straight up on the couch like an extra in the music video for like 3 seconds.
Yes. So the thing about Brandy, people never give her enough respect. She was one of the best voices of like the era of peak R&B, and I think her album Full Moon is like one of the most fully formed, fully realized like versions of like late 90s R&B ever that existed ever.
Dang.
And it was produced by Rodney Jerkins, who made a lot of the Mary Mary album, and they were all friends, and you know, Warren Campbell, all of them, they all ran together, and it, like, I felt Brandy vibes in that early Mary Mary stuff, which I liked.
Oh, fully, yeah.
Seriously, go back and play Full Moon. It holds up. It's a perfect album.
We'll do it next week for a whole episode. Maybe it's Christian. I don't know. Then we're going to do another episode about Moesha and its influence on the UPN lineup. We're going to do it all.
Exactly.
We're going to have to talk about the Rodgers and Hammerstein Cinderella, because that's what I think of when I think of Brandy, too.
Impossible.
Impossible.
Our definitive fairy godmother.
Oh, it's so good.
Uh-huh.
Have we talked about Shackles yet?
No, we have not. No, we can play a little bit of that. Which, if you watch the music video, it's about rent eviction. I don't mind. I'm not kidding.
Timely for the moment.
Yes.
It's a very catchy song. But also, in this song, they don't ever say Jesus. Right?
Nope.
They don't. They wanted crossovers.
I just assumed they did.
No, Google the lyrics. They're not saying Jesus.
Okay, I'm gonna share my screen and show you part of the music video where a woman unfortunately lives in a city where there's not a rent freeze because of the pandemic. Here we go.
Eviction. Oh my God.
It's real.
It is real. And the butterfly comes, what? And that's
the butterfly
God
comes
the rent.
And says, "I'm your landlord now, honey."
Hey,
rent is a thousand kisses. No, there's a nice ending. Yeah, let's look at it. Someone knocks. It's just. A hat full of money. Stuffed with cash is the answer to that woman's problems.
That's amazing.
I also love how they have all these dancers, but they can't like actually choreograph it because that would be too secular. So everyone's kind of dancing, but there's no like moves because that would be too much. That would be
too
much.
Yeah, not even the sisters. They weren't dancing.
Right?
Yeah. Wow. Well, I mean, not choreographed, but that really is throwing me that Jesus is in it. I guess because the whole chorus is I'm going to praise you, which I think implies like it's going to be God.
It implies Jesus or paid your rent.
A lunatic man. Wait, you think it's about praising a landlord for letting you stay in your place?
Yeah.
You know,
also,
what I love about
Yeah. What I love about this song Shackles is that like the verses are short and the chorus is actually short and the bridge is short. And so in the song, by around 2 minutes and 15 seconds, they've kind of sung the whole song. Mm-hmm. And so then they just have to sing the chorus over and over and over. And these two sisters are just trying to ad lib to keep you interested. And like by the end, they're just like, "Lau! Lau! Yelling! Yelling!" They're just like, "Please keep paying attention to us for this song. We must get this song to 3:15 to make it long enough for the radio. Please stay with us."
Okay, can I be honest? I felt like the whole album was like that in some ways too. And I know part of it is just like the genre, but it did, I did want them to like break the formula here and there of like the verses, the chorus is introduced and then we do that. And then they just riff like crazy for the last minute of every
single
song. Here we
go again. Another round. It's happening again. Yeah. Yes, thankful was like
they got
that.
Oh yeah, they're doing runs.
Most of them are
like, but you know what's crazy? So like me and my friends in church, we were obsessed with Mary Mary and that album. And when their second album came out, I think it was called Incredible or whatever, we compared the songs from each album. They kind of made the same album twice. Like the flow of the songs, the pacing of the songs, the topic and tone of each song. If you
there's a song called Chains on the next one instead of Shackles. We want called Grateful instead of
Handcuffs.
But they like had a formula for a while. I remember that.
How many views do you think the Shackles video has? The music video.
47 million.
That's
a totally random guess.
Caroline, what do you say? Just give me a guess real quick.
I'm going to say 60 million.
That's 23 million.
Oh. They need to do better.
You think that's too...
America needs to draw closer to God.
Too few?
Come on.
I think for a song
this
that came out...
This nation has fallen away from its founding roots.
Yes. For a song that came out 20 years ago, I feel like that's pretty good.
That's amazing.
I don't know.
No, I think Sam's estimation really threw me off. Yeah, that is like an insane number for a 90s song.
I think the test is to check the views 3 weeks after this episode has been out to see if we give them a bump.
The old GCS.
Give them
bump.
The old 100 view bump.
Yeah. Give you enough views to get like a Squarespace sponsorship deal for like 3 more weeks, but not 6 more weeks.
Ooh,
edge it out, perhaps. What were some other standout tracks for both of you? Sam mentioned Be Happy, which I just wrote down. It sounds like the underwater level of a video game.
Yeah, I like this one. I thought it was so smooth.
Oh, yeah. But also like a slow jam R&B love song, and you don't know who they're talking about.
Oh, absolutely.
I think this reminds me of Out of Eden. I think that's also why I like it.
Out of Eden is...
Sam, did you ever listen to Out of Eden?
Which one were they? I remember them. They were like a little group, right?
The girl trio, yeah. They were knockoff Destinies, I think.
That was like the only Christian band that I like listened to when I was a kid that I liked because they came through our like Michigan church for some reason. But but apparently they don't hold up. But, you know, there's debate on that issue.
You know, there's a lot of discourse. It rages on Reddit to this day.
Rages.
Dividing families.
I liked their song on the album, the last song where they cover Wade in the Water and they just go to church. Like, it was one of the songs on the album where I'm like, oh, they're finally just doing church. Thanks,
ladies. I kind of wanted more of this, too, because it was also, like, a lot more, like, rock and roll, it felt like, than a lot of the other songs, too.
Definitely looser. Like, they weren't trying to placate two basses.
Yeah.
And a mashup that makes sense in that respect because there is still like contemporary arrangement on a tradition.
Yeah. And by the end, because Mary Mary, they're just hollering. They're just like,
okay, let me skip to the end.
Yep.
I bet you can figure out like what their highest note is, and that's probably like the one they do.
I mean,
it's amazing, but it is it's up there every time.
Did we mention that they're actually sisters?
They are sisters.
Yes. They are actually sisters. They came much like
one of them married the producer.
Yeah,
the Campbell guy. But they both married Campbells, which is weird.
Oh,
so their last name is both Campbell now. Which is strange. That's their married name.
Coincidence? Yeah. Yes, it is.
Mary, Mary, Campbell, Campbell.
The one of the songs I was most struck by, I think, because of the elongated instrumental outro was Still My Child, which is kind of a ballad about a bunch of messed up people who have crappy lives and are wondering if they're still God's child. Although, Sam, I wonder if you'll hear this. The intro sounds like El Shaddai by Amy Grant, doesn't it? Listen to it again.
Right? Well, it's also that keyboard. Like, that was the 90s keyboard sound.
Mm-hmm.
Like, every song had that keyboard in it for a while.
Totally.
I love it. Take me back. He had many
of bad habits. What did you like about this song, Kevin?
I just like hearing about a guy with bad habits. As a guy with bad habits, I see myself reflected in the music.
I was going to say, when I like, the first verse, I was like, oh, is this our first, like, Fallen Man song? You know, where it's like there's like a trope of songs where it's about like some general woman out there who's struggling with life or is a slutty or whatever you think about her, and then God comes and saves her. And so I thought this was gonna be a one where it's like there's a man
who gets it.
He's playing too many video games.
There's a boy who locks himself in his bathroom. His mother doesn't know what he's doing in there.
Stealing a CD.
It's me.
So relatable. This is our nation.
This is it.
But then the second verse goes to some other lady, so then I was like, all right.
Also, I did want to play a little bit of the song 1 Minute because it's one of the best, most mathematically pleasing choruses I've ever heard in my life.
Okay. Do it.
I also think this is a God or boyfriend song, too.
Oh, yeah. I know it now that I was such a fool to turn back on you. God. When you were giving me everything, I let you down and know that's true. Now I've come to realize that there are no halves.
It adds up. It adds up.
The thing.
Yes.
I think.
And you could sing this to Jesus or your boyfriend.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Although, good grief, don't we all love talking to our Heavenly Father or our significant other like you're trying to sell them a timeshare?
Yes,
I just need one minute of your
just
time.
Just 1 minute of your time.
I'm going to convince you this is a terrific investment. You're not going to regret it.
Yeah, it does imply like God is so busy.
That's the thing I was struck by in this metaphor, and I don't know if any of us had this, for all of our issues growing up, I don't know if any of us had this perception or issue with God of like, oh, he's just busy. He won't listen to me. He's busy.
I was always under the impression that he was like waiting for my call.
Yeah.
Like, when's Sam gonna call? When's Sam gonna call? Sam, you better call.
The proper evangelical view of God is that he is thirsty. He's home alone on a Friday night. He's waiting for that phone to buzz.
Waiting.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And he's like, no, tell me more about your brother. Like, again, I can't get enough.
Yeah.
You know, every time.
Yeah. I want to hear all about
I gotta hear it.
I wasn't doing anything. No, go ahead.
No, it's fine.
Tell me.
No wars. I don't care.
Also, 1 minute.
I don't do those.
It has kind of this arrangement that I think is typical of a few songs on the album, where it does, I think for a lot of us who grew up in a particular time, the R&B sound sounds like it's the end credit song for a blockbuster movie, where it's like R. Kelly doing I Believe I Can Fly.
Yeah. It's very Casey and JoJo-esque. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or R. Kelly doing Gotham City at the end of Batman.
Uh-huh. And yes.
Yeah, just R. Kelly songs, but R&B songs were quite the thing for end credits for a particular time in cinema. Yes.
I miss that time. Oh, those were the days.
I don't miss R. Kelly, but I do miss that time.
Well, yeah, I don't miss R. Kelly. I miss the heyday of R&B.
Absolutely.
Because now these rappers today, I can't tell what they're saying. I'm so old. I'm like,
little is that true?
That I don't know what they're saying.
Well, have you tried Jesus is King by Kanye West?
That guy. I feel like God's like, actually, Kanye, stop calling me.
A Kirk Franklin collaborator, a longtime partner, I guess, at this point. Have you talked to anyone else, by the way, in CCM besides Kirk Franklin? Have you talked to any other artists that are involved in this world through your work?
No, really just him. Because when we've done like music interviews, it's been a lot of secular artists when we do music stuff. But I should talk to more because he was just, he was a delight.
Was he great?
He was so great. And he's just a warm soul.
He's really a Texas boy too.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he is. Dallas.
Yeah. So
Dallas.
Not quite.
I just like him. I feel like he has to hold back so many good stories he could tell, you know, he's way more like cool than he can let on. But he's also just like amazing. And he's Kirk Franklin.
Yeah. No, he's the best.
Yeah, he's between two worlds. Any other songs we want to talk about on the album before we might give it a whole rating?
I want to talk about Good to Me.
Good to Me. Okay, this is the feature with Destiny's Child. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Beyonce doing Beyonce.
Oh, yeah.
Is that her?
I do more tricks than you. Yeah. See, I always felt like this song wasn't finished.
This is a
like
cover.
Half a chorus.
It's a cover of a Curtis Mayfield song, I think.
Really?
Good to Me. Oh. Yeah. Yeah. Or like a little rewrite of it. Uh huh.
Huh. I wanted the chorus to do more. Growing up in a real big family,
autobiographical details about my life.
I know it all.
Made this much money.
Yeah, that's the thing that I kind of enjoyed about it. Of like the, I think this is actually a genuine humble brag too, of being like, I used to have to share everything.
I'm rich now.
I don't share a damn thing now, but like it wasn't me, you know, it was all God. Like, thank you. And then like detailing the things that you have now, it's very funny.
Oh, we gotta figure
out. It was luxury rap.
Yeah, it's fully like prosperity rap. We gotta figure out like a good term, Caroline, for like you're bragging, but you still say glory to God for it.
Oh,
so it's
yeah.
like, it's not by my power, it's through his.
Well, that's like every testimony ever.
Right. It's mm-hmm. like, and then I crushed this, and I was amazing at this, and then I uh-huh. aced this, and that's the Lord.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what I was attracted, you know, I didn't play this part. I'm gonna boomerang back to Still My Child, because I found this to be the most delightful lyric on the album, because it was a metaphor that, you know, maybe a lot of people are going through and fully feel. Here, I'm going to play this line for you guys.
I know the answer to your question. Yes, the Father still loves you. Sometimes when you have children, you don't always like what they do.
It's
that
true.
Stuck out to me too, yeah.
It's true.
Man, I don't like this.
I don't like my kids. I fucking hate my kids.
We need
and it's that fun. Frozen is basic. You need to move on now.
We need to normalize not only Christian and gospel singers, but singers of all ilk hating their children and not wanting to spend time. I don't like what they do.
It would make for great lyrics. I would love to have aging rappers make albums now about their shit kids. Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well,
so relatable.
We're encountering, like, this will be really the, because of the newness of the genre, we're encountering the first generation of, like, what does a rapper look like in their late 50s?
Yeah.
Early
60s? Like, Jay-Z's in his 50s, right? I think he's, like, one of the
I want Jay-Z to make, like, a Lemonade-level album about the kids. Just, like, gossip and drama of the kids.
I hate driving to soccer practice.
Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I do feel like Kanye's, like, music is a lot about his kids now, too.
Oh, yeah.
He's full on nepotism now.
Yay was, there was a Foley as a Father of Daughters anthem on that mm-hmm. album. Like, truly. Mm-hmm. No joke.
Yeah.
Well, I think maybe it's time to give our final judgments on the album and perhaps rate it. The way this works, Sam, is that we give it a thumbs up, a thumbs down, or a side thumb. Thumbs up is a holy toast. This is when we send the album to heaven and we say,
yeah.
Thumbs down is a holy roast. And that's when we say to the album,
No.
Do you know that it. Song, Sam?
That's the Winans.
Yes.
When I ever leave you,
yes.
When I love you. Yeah. Oh,
the
yeah.
conflict
oh, yeah.
in Afghanistan. My favorite international crisis gospel song.
Yes.
Or, I also love how, like, the Winans' whole catalog, like, you could play Winans' music for 3 days straight because all of them have made, like, 17,000 albums.
Yes.
It's amazing. There's
well,
so
I
many
thinking,
of them.
Oh,
it's like Law and Order.
Something I was going to say about that is I feel like the R&B gospel category has just like so many Von Trapp families of just
yes.
like musicians and then extended families of those musicians and then sibling groups and then like hodgepodge of all of those. And then their parents were like stars before them. Like it's a huge part of all
yes.
of this industry. Yeah.
Well, my theory is this that family approach to music works because if you're a big family with a bunch of kids, you know that in any church you go to, there's built-in childcare. There are women or men there that will watch your kid. Mm-hmm. Like, it is the easiest thing to do if you have a bunch of kids.
That's a huge element of it, yeah.
Total village.
Which, you know, I really like that part of the church and that element of it.
Yeah,
and
of
especially,
course.
Like, as someone who, when it was safe to, did like volunteer doing childcare stuff, it was great for single people or childless people to have like exposure to that sort of thing and then have to like, you know, for one day out of the week, build up like the patience for that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then it was great yeah. to like give people a break legitimately, like for free.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, it's a good way to socialize adults.
Yeah,
exactly.
Truly.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
And then our...
Sorry, it's getting really dark in my room.
No, it's great. Our side okay. thumb, we send it to Purgatory, which we call...
The Space Between.
Oh, man. Those are good music posts.
I hope so.
Posts.
Yeah, they come from the opposite spectrums. You go from the wine
yes.
to Dave Matthews.
Dave Matthews. That is a jump. Yes.
We'll start, as usual, with Caroline.
Man, I feel conflicted because this album didn't like totally pop for me. I'm sorry. Again, I felt like the structure maybe just isn't my favorite. It was repetitive. But Shackles is on this album. So therefore, Holy Toast.
This is like holy when you see Up and you don't remember anything except for the first 5 minutes of
yes,
Up.
It's yes,
like,
I
think there was a bird, a huge dog flew fan, a plane, but those first 5 minutes.
First 5 minutes.
Yes.
All right, then we turn to Sam.
So I'm going to give it the in the middle one.
Oh, the space
because
between.
Because I want everyone to go listen to their second album, Incredible, which is like twice as good. Their
whoa,
second album was great. Yes.
Oh.
So I'm not going to give this one the most full-throated endorsement because I want people to go back to the Mary Mary mm-hmm, Back catalog and check out their 2002 album called Incredible.
Oh, dang. Oh, we screwed up by not doing that one. Whoops.
No, this one is the one that, no, this one has more fodder to like chew on. Okay. Yeah.
I think
this
so.
This has more probably to chew on. Yes. Yes.
I know. It's hard. It's easier. It's more fun to give a pan than to have a good review where it's like, I like this part again.
Yeah.
I'm gonna give it a holy toast. It wasn't that hard for me to arrive
okay,
there as a conclusion.
Okay.
I
there you go.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. The Shackles element does make it sort of like an unimpeachable thing for me. But I love Thankful. I love I Sings. I love I Got It in 1 minute and Still My Child. And especially the closure,
okay,
Wait in the Water. So
Wait in the Water is good.
Leave
Wait
them wanting more.
Wait in the Water is great. Yeah.
So you can vote for it yourself, listener. Go to @ChristianFunPod. We'll put up a poll and you can get out there and
Pokemon go to the polls.
Ballers.
Now, on the NPR Politics podcast, did you ever have drops like that?
No.
And if not, don't you think that was a mistake?
To not do that in 2016, yeah, that was a mistake.
To not do that is the equivalent of what Jimmy Fallon did when he did this to our president's little
head. Oh, my God. You're right.
All right. Well, we're dimming the lights here. We're lighting the candles. And we're taking it to a more worshipful, more prayerful space. And Sam, we're not here to promote ourselves and seek the glory of man. We're here to lift our social media handles up, to lift our projects up to the Lord, and to lift up what we might be enjoying in culture right now. And we'll start with Caroline.
Okay.
You can lift up my lack of projects to the Lord at Caroline's Farts on any of my social media. I actually don't have something to lift up, but there is a thing I wanted to say about Mary Mary, and that'll be my plug. Do you guys think for Halloween they were scary scary?
This one.
I do.
I like that.
I do.
I like that. I would say yes.
Yeah, and
okay,
they had the chains rattling like a ghost. They're shackles. Absolutely.
Yes, they did.
It's
yes,
kind
they
of
did.
A, yeah.
I love
and also,
ghosts.
Do you think they you did Mary Mary for Christmas, but other
with
spelling of
two
Mary
two
R's? Mary?
Yes, I yeah, think they okay, did.
Ah, all right,
that's
Mary
all I
Mary.
To know.
I okay, get it. I get it.
I have to respect the move to take time for that. To say no.
It didn't come up.
This is Caroline's version of Nevertheless, it. She Persisted.
I'm leaning in forever.
Lean all the way
I
in and
it,
fall over.
Oh,
all right,
love it,
we turn it to Sam. Where can people find okay, you? What do you have to lift up?
Yeah, I am @SamSanders, SamSanders. And right now, the pop culture I'm enjoying most, Michaela Cole's show, I May Destroy You, is damn near perfect. It's just so good. And it's a show that shouldn't work, but it does. It is a drama about consent and rape that makes you laugh in many moments. It is, it's just weird and quirky and strange and beautiful. And it's funny. So I interviewed her about a year ago before this show came out. We were talking about chewing gum and this other show she did, Black Earth Rising. We talked a lot about her faith. She was a born-again Christian for a long time, and it influences her work a lot. And you'll see little nods to it in every show she does. For instance, in the premiere of I May Destroy You, the first episode, there's a scene in a bar where everyone gets way too wasted and is high on God knows what, and she's trashed out of her mind, and she's stumbling out of the bar. And instead of hearing EDM music or loud club music, she plays a gospel song with the gospel choir as you see her drunk stumble out of the bar.
Wow.
And it was just weirdly, strangely transcendent. I cannot recommend the show enough. It's really good, and she's great.
I have to second that also. That's my big contribution. Oh, I was going to ask you off air, though, but I'll ask you on air. What do you, I feel like she is like this rolling ball of momentum right now. Like, what do you think will be the next thing that she does? And like, where do you see her going?
You know, at a certain point, so she's making shows about her life. Like, Chewing Gum was about her life. This show is about her life. At a certain point in a career like that, you start writing about something else, and I don't know when that comes for her. Like, I don't know if she's written all that she's going to write about her life. I would love to see her do a Michaela Cole on, like, some old tropes. Like, what would Michaela Cole do with the structure of a rom-com, you know? So, like, I'm loving all of this autobiographical content from her, but I would also love to see how she could just fuck up the paradigm in some other genres. Because she's just such an incredible writer and actress. Like, I want to see her take on the parody film and the rom-com and the, like, old British drama, and, like, let her do all of the things, because she's just got the mind for it. So I love that she is living in a space now where the content comes from her life. But at some point, I would be interested to see what happens when she writes about other stuff, too. But whatever she does, I'll eat it up.
And especially with her trajectory, she's going to run out of life. You can't make a TV show
she's
about making a critically acclaimed TV. Like,
she needs another 10 years.
Yeah, of course.
Exactly.
So, no, that's, that's probably a good path forward for her. Well, you can lift me up at Kevin T. Porter everywhere, and I'll lift up a podcast I've enjoyed for a long time. It's called It's Been a Minute with Sam Sanders.
What
he's, you know, for those who may not know, Sam Sanders is a terrific interviewer, terrific host. His enthusiasm is infectious. He makes every conversation feel natural, energetic, but inevitable, while also surprising at the same time. So listen to that
Thank
show.
Thank you so much.
Of course.
I'm framing that. I'm going to print that out and frame it.
Aww.
Thank you.
It's like a, there's like, it's a, like a poll quote, like on a poster where it's like actual news outlets, and it's like, some guy said...
Deputy Porter from Kingwood, Texas.
Houston native. You can lift us up at Christian Fun Pod everywhere. You can go to patreon.com/goodchristianfun for more good Christian fun. And you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. And every review you leave, we donate a dollar to charity. And this month's charity continues to be Black Lives Matter. Sam, thank you so much for joining us on the show today, friend. What a fun
time.
This was
delightful.
This was the best.
Felt like church.
So
it
felt,
I hope it
I
felt like
it.
Church. Yeah. I hope it didn't feel as long as church did.
It's so sweaty.
This
and there's nothing left
Thank
to say
so
except for, and all of Pod's people said, amen.
Amen, amen.
Sam.
Amen. Yes.
Mary style.
Sam, what is a Mary Mary song, or any song, any CCM song or gospel song that you would like us to go out on?
Oh, I'm going to have you guys go out on the song that Michaela Cole plays in her show as she drunk stumbles out of a bar.
Perfect.
And I'm going to find it for you. Bear with me 1 second. Just because it's like, okay, when you hear this song and you imagine this song being set to a drunk stumble in a bar, you're going to be like, whoa, it's crazy. And the song is called It's Gonna Rain by Reverend Milton Brunson, B-R-U-N-S-O-N. Milton Brunson and the Thompson Community Singers.
All righty, we're going to go out on that song. Here it is.
And so you're hearing this while she's knocking over drinks. Right?
Beautiful.
It's such a strange juxtaposition.
But if you, the listener out there in 2020, are thinking about going into a bar, I want you to hear this song in your head.
Yes.
Do it.
And don't drink too much.
Don't drink too much.
Because God is watching.
Yes. Yes, that's why. All right, we'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye. All right.
Thank y'all. Bye.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.